From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Hi, I am Paul Edwards, and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'd like to thank our producer, Brian Charlson, and our erstwhile editor, Steve Bauer. Brian isn't with us this evening. He's off getting a new puppy, which I think many of us will be very glad to hear. So he will not be around for the next couple of weeks, and you guys will have to deal with Paul Edwards on his own. Steve Bauer continues to edit our program and turn it from a somewhat chaotic discussion into an opportunity for us to have a program that's sensible and well-organized. Now, we do have some folks who are attending this evening by text chat, so listeners, please note that there will be occasions when I will actually be interpreting what people are actually typing as messages. And in addition, we do have some folks who are a part of our discussion, hopefully by mic, and we will probably see some other folks arrive as our program proceeds, and we'll just have to hope that their mics are okay. I'd like also to express my appreciation to George Byes of Talking Communities, who made this software available to ACB Radio. Without that software, we would not be able to produce and record, and therefore edit and broadcast this program. So, George, we very much appreciate Talking Communities and all that Talking Communities does for people who are blind and for creating communication among those of us who are blind or visually impaired. Our topic this evening is one that doesn't get discussed as much as I think perhaps it should, but it's one that's certainly important. For the last 15 or 20 years, there has been a general assertion that the unemployment rate among people who are blind is around 70%. When the Americans with Disabilities Act passed in 1990, one of the hopes was that that unemployment rate would substantially change because of the passage of ADA and the sweeping away of discrimination in the private sector against those who are blind, just as discrimination at the federal government level had been swept away by the passage of Section 504 in the 1970s, supposedly. The fact is that according to polls that have been conducted by the Harris polling company initially prior to the ADA and subsequently 10 years on into the ADA, there has been virtually no impact that the ADA appeared to have on the employment of people with severe disabilities. The unemployment rate for that population remains at 70%. And it should also be noted that the way that they measured unemployment was not in the context of the overall disabled population, but instead in the context that the Labor Department uses, that is, in the context that looked at individuals who were supposedly job-ready and who were supposedly in the market for jobs and were actively seeking employment, the same way that other labor statistics are developed. It's probably worth putting on the table that, in general, the unemployment rate for the general population hovers between 5 and 6%. And that for other minorities, excluding disabled people, it generally is under double digit. Generally. Not always, but generally. So there is a huge difference between the unemployment rate for folks with severe disabilities and the unemployment rate of the general population. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is why? if in fact we accept that those statistics have value, why is it that there's such a huge difference? And I think I'm going to open it up to whoever would like to start by providing us with a hypothesis that we can begin to discuss.
Well, I think there are a few reasons. I think certainly discrimination does play a role, and that will probably always be the case. But I also think part of it has to do with education and the types of jobs at least blind people tend to seek. Without, you know, hopefully offending anybody or anything like that, most blind people I know of seem to seek call center type positions, and those types of positions are shrinking. So it's going to be harder for us to find jobs because we're seeking jobs that are shrinking in the general society. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well. And, you know, the educational opportunities that blind people have or don't have, or that plays a big role in it as well.
Dave McElroy of Visalia, California here, responding to Chris and to the topic in general. I think the call center jobs that you're referring to are not so much being sought out by blind people as there are agencies out there, and I don't want to cast aspersions, but the latest, of course, is South Carolina's Commission for the Blind is in that business. There are agencies whose total reason for existence is to place people in call center jobs. Now, speaking for South Carolina, I watched this happen. Back last year, they were pushing people to work for Red Cross. This year, it's Alamo Rent-A-Car, I think. And, of course, they want you to go back and do their program first, which I'm sure somebody gets paid for. I don't know what the answer is, because the truth is that we need more support in many occasions, on many occasions, with many jobs, than the average Joe. I happen to have been a social service worker in the sighted sector for 25 years. But, you know, it came to mutual agreement that it was better for all that I left. And, you know, at almost 50, I've not been able to find another good job since then. I dispatched taxi for a while, but, you know, that got kind of wearing for the money that it didn't pay. As it happens, since I was discriminated against, everybody knew it, I managed to get a little bit of a settlement, so I'm able to. I'm not hurting my Social Security. And yes, I did apply ultimately for SSDI. Is about roughly 35% of my income. So that will change as I go turn 62. But hopefully my investments will kick in and that I'm working on, and hopefully I'll be able to. But you know, I don't know what the answer is, because we do still have trouble with the printed word. We still do have trouble with transportation. These are problems that other disability groups may not have, or at least may not have as severely as do we. I don't know where that takes us.
Chris Westbrook from Pennsylvania, from the Williamsport area of Pennsylvania, was our first speaker this evening. And Chris, can you expand a little bit on what you mean by education playing a part in our high unemployment rate? I'm not sure I quite understand. Are you suggesting that blind people don't have access to education, or are you suggesting something else?
Yeah, I didn't quite expand on that as well as I probably could have. I guess it's true of sighted people as well. Some blind people don't necessarily, they either don't have access to a college education because of the way they were treated in public schools. You know, the public schools went too easy on them, so their grades, and they're not academically ready for a college education, or B, they don't take it as seriously as maybe they should have. And I think if that happens, it's worse off for a blind person to not take education seriously than it would be for for a sighted person, because they can more easily get a sighted person can more easily get an entry level type position of flipping burgers at McDonald's. They can get a job, whereas a blind person it's much harder to get the sort of entry level to sort of build your resume up. So we have to do well in education in order to not only have a good GPA, but to show that we know what we're talking about when we go into interviews. And I think that's a point that not all blind people understand, unfortunately.
Hi, good evening, everybody. This is Anisia Correa from Atlanta. And I, for purpose of full disclosure, I should say that I do work for an agency that works with people who are blind and visually impaired, and one of our goals is to help people re-enter or enter the workforce. So when I see those statistics that indicate 70% of the population is unemployed, and it's pretty depressing, and it's even more depressing when we realize that those statistics don't seem to have changed for the last 20 or 30 years, which means I have made absolutely no difference. I think there probably are a number of reasons. One of the things I wanted to, and I have a number of things that perhaps we'll end up saying tonight, but to follow up on what our friend from Pennsylvania was saying, we are finding more and more people that seem to be finding people that are coming to our programs that don't have a very strong formal education. Now, these are people that were sighted and did not pursue a formal education then, now have lost their vision or have lost considerable amounts and are finding it difficult in finding employment. And I think we, at least blindness agencies, are typically better suited to work with those people with a formal education, people that can take full use of existing technologies and not so much, we don't do as good a job, I don't think, with people with less formal education than they used to work in the more hands-on or labor types of professions. I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but I think that might be one of the issues we are faced with.
With all due respect, I think what we all do, and I'm going to reach back to my experience with the Hmong and Lao populations of Laos for a moment, and one of the things that we do, and this isn't happens in the sighted community, so I'm sure it also happens in the blind community, and as my experience is from the sighted. We got all these people. They all of a sudden came to us, and they had little education and little English, and we said, what do we do with them? Well, the answer was education, we thought. So naturally, everybody got shoved into education. I suspect we do the same thing in the blindness arena, and I no aspersions on Anisa or anyone else to this. I think it's an easy solution, whereas maybe it's not the most appropriate. But it also appears to be that we have lost a lot of the manufacturing and fabrication jobs that used to be part and parcel of our country have gone away. For example, in the 60s and 70s, a lot of people were having success at small engine repair. Well, that's kind of gone by the wayside now. Small engine brakes, you throw it away. So maybe the answer is better education. I read in a Braille forum many years ago, and I wish I could remember the exact quote or who quoted it. It was somebody from Sweden, I think. And his statement was, it's easier to train a blind person to be a company president than to be a bus person at a restaurant. And that's a paraphrase, but that's what he said. And so, that certainly may in fact be true. But again, to me, the answer comes back to the sighted public appears not to be as willing to accept people who need a little bit of an extra boost, if you will. So therefore, the blindness, the people who work, who are blind, work for the blind, work for agencies for the blind, by and large. I mean, that's a great employment opportunity. Again, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't think you could say either way.
Well, hello everyone. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. Well, it seems like that's the case. It seems like sighted people have trouble with the idea of getting, you know, hiring blind people for probably a number of reasons. I don't know. I mean, maybe they don't think we can do the jobs that we're hiring out to do. And it's sad and it's disheartening about the unemployment figure, 70%. Then some people wonder if that's actually true. I may be misinformed. But then there's a counselor I talked with one time said that some people who are blind that he's helped get jobs would get a job and then they'd lose it or something, they'd blow it. And some of them, he said, I don't know how many, but some would rather be on welfare than work. I don't know. That's a bit disheartening if that's the case. I hope maybe I'm wrong, but I've heard that might be the case, indeed, that some would rather be on welfare. But, I mean, I'm trying not to put a bad face on this thing, but I hope that that's not true. It's just what I heard.
Well, we've certainly heard some interesting kind of introductory statements that relate to why blind people don't work. In some of the surveys that have been done, some of the results are interesting, and some of the statistics that are beginning to emerge over time are intriguing too. One of the things that appears to be of importance is that in this generation, let's say from the 1980s onwards, there is a much smaller proportion of the blind population who does any work whatsoever until they actually reach the end of their formal education. That is, a lot of the statistics that are coming out of post-high school studies are indicating that blind people who are in high school have, A, not had a job, but more significantly, B, not been a part of extracurricular activities, and C, for the most part, haven't dated. And this certainly would suggest that by the time these people are actually out of high school, they may not be as ready for the society that they suddenly find themselves a part of as members of other populations. Maybe we could spend a few minutes talking about that. Do we think blind people are, for the most part, job ready when they come onto the employment market?
Interesting question, Paul. And to answer that for myself, I think back to a time when I was at UC Santa Cruz for an introductory program to how to be a college student. I'd already been to one of those for a regular population. I didn't do real well in there, but I didn't do horribly. But one of the things that we did was we visited the Orientation Center for the Blind. And I saw some of the people there, and I made up my mind then and there that I would not have any part of that building or that group of people in it. I tried to make myself more attuned to the sighted world from that day onward, with moderate success. I don't say I was the perfect, you know, and I certainly didn't have any success in high school. I was one of those that didn't date in high school, and so we can go. That's another story. I think there's a lot of immaturity within the blind community. Now, does that mean we're not ready for the real world? I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's a lot of immaturity in the sighted world, too. I tend to think that may not be a deciding factor myself.
Hi, this is Aubrey Webson in Boston. I've been following the conversation, and the discussion is very interesting. I want to take you back to a couple of points raised by Anisio and add one or two others. This, obviously, the statistics of 70% is appalling, as we all agree, and particularly so because it's been around for 25, 30 years, I agree. I think a lot of what we the professionals like us seem to be saying, though, is blind people, blind people, blind people. I wonder, though, if we have a 70% unemployment rate, and if what Paul just said with regards to people who are leaving school recently, I wonder if it's the system that provides support for blind persons working. I wonder if it's the system that is not changed and responding to the present environment, because it can't be that 70% of the population remain unemployed for this period of time, and the system doesn't look at itself. To me, that's the first thing we need to do. With regards to the education and so on, I think we need to think again about the discussion around education and the levels that people come into the system, because, again, you have a different population of people in the country, different population who is going blind, and that is something that we have to think about, how we are responding to that.
You know, I think Audrey brings up a good point. I think, and that part of what I was saying earlier with the blind people going into the call center type job, that is what the agencies are pushing them to do, and it's not necessarily the skill set that society wants right now. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, you were talking about how blind people are ready for the real world. I think, and again, I come back to education a little bit, that the educational system has something to do with some blind people not being ready for the real world, because some colleges, the disability services offices, in my opinion, do way too much for the students. Scanning all their books for them, taking notes for them. And you don't have that in the private sector. I don't even think you would have that in the government sector. I haven't been employed as a government employee, so I really wouldn't know. But you definitely don't have it in the private sector. I think some blind people come out of university and they think that that they need to, they demand all these things, and they're just not there.
One of the participants in our program this evening is participating by text chat, and that's John Vaughn from the Florida area here. And John raises the issue of whether societal attitudes aren't a factor as well. And I think by that, John means that society does seem to say to blind people, we're not sure if you're ready for prime time. We're not sure if we regard you as very capable. We're not sure how much you can actually do. So we'll give you a little bit of Social Security if you'll go and quietly sit in a corner and not bother us. So do societal attitudes, perhaps low expectations of blind people, and to a degree, Chris is talking about those when he talks about the way that blind people are often treated in educational institutions. But do societal attitudes also play a part? That is, does the way that society reacts to people who are blind discourage them from seeking to go out into the real world and becoming all that they can be, because society has done such a good job of convincing them of how incapable they are?
I think, this is Aubrey again, I think it does to a large extent, Paul. But again, I raise the question. We can't see the issues of blindness in a world of blindness. It's a broad world, and the other population groups that struggle, and they have fought, some of them have come out on top and won. And we have to begin to examine where are we not struggling? What are we not doing to challenge society's attitude? Or have we, as a group, the blindness sector, are we then satisfied with what we have achieved from society to date? And the answer is probably not, is what I'm hearing. And what we need, and then the organizations of blind people, along with the agencies that work with blind people, we probably need to rethink strategies and begin to wage the challenge as a civil rights issue. You can't have 70% of any population unemployed, and it's not a civil rights issue.
Yeah, that's right. But you think that maybe people, blind folks, don't try harder, maybe because they don't think they can do because of what they felt that society has told them that they can't do, so they went along with that equation or something?
Well, again, I am not so much the individual person, and you will find a number of individual blind persons who I'm sure who are working hard and challenging. But the question has to be more about organized blindness, organizations and organized services, because the individual is probably getting nowhere. That's what we are saying here. And if the individual isn't, then as a group, we have to begin to address the question more firmly.
I find myself asking myself and asking others. I know we were on a list, I was on a discussion earlier with a gentleman in Arizona who happens to have done some things for himself, and he is of the opinion that, you know, it is our fault as blind people that we are unemployed. It is our fault as blind individuals that we are not willing to get out and be, you know, have our doors slammed in our faces and do what we need to do. I have to admit, when I was working, I had that belief as well. And I still do to a degree, but maybe not to as much of a degree as I did. But I do think that maybe things like Social Security, and especially SSI, even maybe more than SSDI, encourage people not to try, not to spread their wings, if you will. And again, I think that's been a disservice over time. That SSI, we now know it started in 1974. There were scattered programs of aid to the blind from different states prior to that, but 74 is when we really, you know, saw it come into play. I don't know. I think that there's a partial answer there. I think we as blind people aren't willing to take risks, maybe. And yet, again, that can't be all the answer. It's not the whole answer, but maybe it's part of it.
I'm sorry for coming in so often. But again, I want to ask a question. SSI, SSDI, you know, that's a welfare question, right? And that question, in the general population, 1994, there were welfare-to-work responses. How many agencies for the blind, how many organizations of the blind took up the issue of welfare-to-work and said, let's get some blind people to begin to be part of these programs?
Yeah, I think that the answer is in the blindness organizations, you know, getting together to help those blind people, help each other, you know. But, well, like Dave mentioned about SSI and SSDI, but when I retired from the state about 11 years ago, you know, I was 55, and they were suggesting maybe that I should get on disability because at that age, it would be hard to find employment, other employment, because I might have lost some of my benefits through the state if I had, I could have taken a layoff and they might have found something for me. But I could have at that point lost my benefits that I had attained over the years through working for the state. And that's one reason that I suppose I took up with going on disability retirement, I guess. I'm not really that disabled, but I mean, that's, you know, that's why I took up the disability retirement, because at that point it's harder to find a job when you're over 50, I think, than it is when you're younger.
I'm going to respond to Aubrey's question for a moment, and then I'll open it up for other people to do that as well. Aubrey, I don't think for the most part that organizations of the blind or agencies working with people who are blind regarded welfare to work as having a lot of application to people who are blind. I think for the most part there was a generalized expectation that really ought not to include or touch people who are blind. And therefore, for the most part, states and other agencies who were implementing welfare to work almost made it a practice to exclude people who are blind, which would, to a degree, speak to the whole issue of lowered expectation. It was almost as though there was a belief that blind people were entitled to what they got as SSI recipients. Let me, while I have the mic, talk a little bit about the issue that Dave raised with regard to SSI. One of the arguments that's out there, and again, it's something that we can discuss, is that Social Security, whether we're talking about SSI or SSDI, both represent disincentives to work. And they do so because, for the most part, blind people don't have the experience to get into jobs at a relatively high level of pay, and therefore are often looking for entry-level positions. These entry-level positions often will not enable blind people to afford to acquire all of the medication and other equipment that they need in order for them to be effective and able to survive on the job. So rather than take entry-level jobs, many blind people, it is argued, stay on the sidelines and don't, in fact, seek the jobs that are out there. On the other hand, those who have worked some and are entitled to SSDI are faced with the stark reality that they can earn so much, but once they exceed that earning limit, their SSDI is gone, and it will take an awfully long time to get it back, and perhaps more importantly, an awful long time to get Medicare back. So Social Security may play a role as well in the high unemployment rate.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to Tuesday Topics. Once again, your host, Paul Edwards.
Let me open it up and see if people want to comment on any of these issues.
Paul, this is Anisha from Atlanta. One of the things that recent legislation, from last 10 years or so, the Ticket to Work legislation that Clinton started, even though there's a lot of negative stuff around that legislation, one of the good things, the positive things about it is the fact that, in fact, it allows a person to go back to work, and even if they are able to make enough money not to draw Social Security disability at all, they can still retain their medical benefits, I believe, up to 9 years. And the other piece of it is that should they lose their job, the format, the process for reentering or for reapplying for Social Security disability is a lot more streamlined and quicker. But I don't know that a lot of people still know that. I think the whole issue that several people have talked about here about low expectations is a real issue, it's a problem that permeates the system itself, obviously society, but also the system of service delivery and the people that we serve. And I tend to see that every day, and it's very disheartening. And it's something that we need to face and develop some strategies to address it.
Aubrey, Paul, first of all, with regards to your point, low expectation, again, emphasized by Anisio, whereas I think that that is again correct, isn't that it's low expectation at a low income group, but isn't that the very issue of the system not expecting blind persons to take advantage of this or that, and in this case, the welfare to work program? Isn't that the same thing that goes right across and affects the entire attitude of society towards blind people? That all of these things add up towards the attitudinal problem. Let me throw out one other thing. Based on the systems that we live in here in America, the system of the SSI and SDI, we live in an entitlement system. The rest of the world are talking about rights. We're not talking about employment as a right. We tend to focus on entitlement. And I think that's a big difference in terms of advocacy, whether it is for me as an individual or for an organized group. When populations are faced with adversity and they speak against a disadvantaged population, like the African-American population in the civil rights of women, they didn't speak about entitlement. They spoke about their right. We're not saying that for blind persons.
Well, and maybe that's maybe if that were the case, maybe the unemployment rate of blind people would be a lot lower than it is at present.
Aubrey, I'm still not sure I completely get your point. Let me try to paraphrase it a little, and then you can correct me if you would. I think what I hear you saying is that whereas in the rest of the civil rights community, people are fighting for the right to work and the right to full participation and the right to full inclusion, we in the disability community are fighting for Social Security or fighting for a certain level of income rather than the right to be fully included. Is that really what you're saying?
No, because I'm not sure we are fighting for that. But we have a system that gives us that entitlement, and we believe that. And as you were saying earlier, it's a system that we accept, and it isn't just in the blindness community. It is a lot of our social services are based on entitlement. But in many other places, it's not about entitlement, it's about rights, and that's a different issue. And if you took the civil rights struggles of other population groups, they would, part of their concern in fighting entitlement is saying we have a right to work, we have a right to an education, and so on.
And I think that what he's saying, Paul, and I agree with Aubrey, entitlement, if you're going to fight or if you're going to accept entitlement, then basically you're accepting a status of being less than the rest of the population, for example. I see this in transportation. We need to be standing up and saying, we have a right to get from point A to point B. Instead, we're talking about our entitlement to paratransit service, which barely makes the grade, if at all. I think that's what Aubrey's saying, and I think he's very correct. We are afraid to fight for what we're afraid to fight for what we deserve. Instead, we accept what we get.
I used to use the city bus system to go back and forth to work, but then what happened, they rerouted the bus line so that I would have to cross the street, which is no problem, but for a while I had to only just go down the street to catch the bus almost in front of our house, but down a block ways, but then they fixed it so you have to cross the street, but then you have to take, then they had to have a bus pass to get to go from one bus to another, then get to work, and the time it would have been time consuming, and it might have been as late if at all, but that's why I went to paratransit. I don't know if that's that case with everyone. Our paratransit seems to do fine for us, but I believe in that we should learn to use the buses when we can, but sometimes I suppose you need to have that paratransit if you need it sometimes.
One of the questions that kind of came up in the interstices of our discussion is one from John Vaughn, who asks whether we've done a good job of letting blind people know about the ticket to work and whether people know enough about it. I suppose the answer to that is no. But I happen to be one of those people who don't like the ticket to work and who think that it has done more harm than good by focusing attention on competition among agencies to collect the hearts and minds of people with disabilities. And it also focuses on those folks who qualify for Social Security rather than on the larger population. So it only deals with a subset of the folks who are out there. I want to return to Aubrey's issue, though, for a moment, if I may, because I'm still not sure that I truly understand the difference. In other parts of the world, there certainly are components of entitlement. In Europe, for example, there is an expectation that employers will provide accommodations and that the government will often pay these folks to provide these accommodations. In a lot of countries, there are funds that are allocated to people with disabilities, which they retain whether they get a job or not. And clearly, these are entitlement programs. And so I guess, Aubrey, I'm still I'm still not clear how you're drawing your line between what you're describing as, if you like, an entitlement attitude and a rights attitude. Give me an example in our society of how a blind person or a blindness organization would move from one to the other.
An entitlement attitude is very much what we've been talking about. People who have made a choice based on the SSI or SDI, and I don't want to knock these programs. I do not really want to knock, I'm not trying to knock these programs, but I am saying that they are, we got to examine that within the context of the problem, as some people referred to earlier. Okay, so people who want to take these things, and the agency pushes this as the first course, instead of us saying, going up to our politicians and so forth, our leadership, and saying, what we want here is an opportunity, just as the African-American population did, just as women did. They didn't say we want entitlement. It doesn't mean that all African-American or all women are off of Social Security, etc. But what it means is that there are opportunities created to make employment available for that population. There are lots of other issues around that. But I'm saying we have not been able to do that because we do not speak of ourselves in this as, like every other member society, with a right to work or a right to whether it is literacy or etc. And that's the difference. Sure, in other Western European countries, we have the same issue. We have the same issue of entitlement and so on, and we have the same issue of high unemployment. There are discussions and debates going on in some Western European countries and some developing countries about the question of, this is really a human rights question. It's not just an entitlement social issue.
So let me see how far you're actually wanting to push this. Are you then suggesting that what we ought to say to, let's say, every kid who comes out of high school or every kid who comes out of university, you have 2 years of SSI, which is essentially what we're saying to a degree to in the Welfare to Work program. And during that time, we have also identified a series of jobs that we believe you can do, and we will require that you accept one of these jobs or lose your benefits. Is that essentially what you're suggesting? Because at its core, that's the way the Welfare to Work program works.
If you put it into that framework, it's about options. It's about helping a kid, first of all, to understand the system. Yes, there is the SSI system. Yes, these are the options within that system. You have the two-year program regarding, as you described, or you can sit on this and you help people to understand what it means, not just today, but what it means for their life down the road as well. So people begin to see broader than just, do I get a job? What does it mean to me as a person, etc. So that the training is not just one-dimensional, or the discussion is not just about, do you take a job now? Do you take SSI now? It is about what are the potentials that you have now and in the future as you look at work, as you look at SSI, as you look at opportunities, as you look at society.
Therefore, the suggestions that I certainly hear Aubrey proposing and perhaps see some agreement on is that one of the objectives that we as organizations of the blind need to be working toward is a fundamental alteration of both the attitude of blind individuals and the attitude of society towards those individuals, so that both are encouraged to see themselves as, if you like, entitled to full participation, but expected as well to contribute substantially to their own salvation. And I think that's certainly one direction that we ought to go in, though it's certainly not one that we've looked really hard at becoming actively involved in. As we do approach the end of this evening, I'd like to ask us to focus on other things that we can perhaps do to change the situation as people perceive it. What other changes can we as the organized blind make, or what other changes should we expect to be made in order to lower this high unemployment rate?
A question I might have then is, if more blind people would be willing to participate in the workforce? Which does it take first? The attitude change from sighted people toward blind people, thinking that we can do more things, or does it take our attitude to change first before they'll change their attitude?
I would think it's an easier from Atlanta that the latter. That you have a lot less of us than the total society, so probably better, easier, or quicker to change our own attitudes. I think the other thing that we may not have time to address, Paul, but I think it's an issue that needs some discussion at some point, is the whole idea of types of jobs that so-called, I don't know what to call them, but, you know, jobs that in the past used to be typical for blind people to have, and they were often called stereotypical jobs like piano tuning, chair caning. I know a number of people that used to do these things and used to do it well and make a good living at that. And now we, professionals at least, often frown at those ideas because of lack of choice or perceived lack of choice. I don't think those people really felt that they didn't have a choice. The other issue also that I see, and this may be related to the whole issue of entitlement and expectations, I remember growing up and meeting lots and lots of blind people that would do all that it would take in order to get a job. If it meant to move to a different community, to move to a bigger city, to make whatever adjustments, personal and family-wise, to attain that. And many of us have done that. And I don't see that being done now or being expected by those that work with blind people.
Aubrey, Paul, I wonder if you could, on this whole discussion, one of the things we might do is bring a panel of young blind people, like college graduates, and maybe you could facilitate that and have them begin to talk about some of the issues, and maybe a few of us could be around, but it would be very important to hear from that group, as that is the group that at least I am most concerned with regards to lack of employment opportunities.
Yeah, I think there's certainly some room for us to do that, and I think down the road that would certainly make for a good discussion. What else can we do? What other options do we have to make this better? I think I hear a kind of a general consensus that we also need to look at Social Security and at SSDI to try to see if we can somehow make both of those systems more friendly to people seeking jobs. One of the proposals is that instead of suddenly reaching a point where the whole of your SSDI goes away, we try to create some benchmark places. And of course, there have been other suggestions that we take away the income test altogether from SSDI folks. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is. So let me put Chris on the spot. Chris from Pennsylvania, you told me before this program started that you got a job about a year ago. Can you tell us a little bit about A, what you do, B, how you got the job, and C, how you feel about the job that you now have?
Yeah, I think some of the things that we need to do is make sure that we have training, not just with blind people and blind people only, but especially with blind people, how to handle a job interview. What questions are going to be asked on a job interview? You know, this is something that seems really simple, but I don't know if it's always done or even mostly done. And also, you know, don't underestimate the power of your friends. You know, make friends. The job I got was because I had a friend at the company. He said, "Hey, we got a job opening. I really think you should come here." And he didn't get me the job, but he got me the interview. And I went to the interview, and I must have done well. I actually didn't think I did that well, but apparently somebody thought I did. And within a few days later, I had the offer, and like Audrey said, I had to move a good hour and a half, hour 45 minutes away to a smaller town, actually. Wasn't a bigger city. Was not where I had intended to live at all, but I knew I had to get this job. So I did whatever I had to do to get the job, including living in a not-so-great situation for a month or two. So I think there are a number of different things that we can do. I think, you know, foremost is what I mentioned with being prepared for interviews, but also making sure that blind people have good blindness skills and making sure that they can do things like dress themselves and stuff like that. I know we kind of take that kind of stuff for granted, but personal hygiene and that kind of stuff is very important.
Well, I think Dave McElroy made a good point about, and I don't know if this has been addressed or not, do more people who are blind rather work for a blindness agency or with other blind people, or would they rather work for sighted agencies or just the mainstream companies?
Gary, I don't have statistics that are really strong with regard to this, but there is a lot of evidence out there, I think, that actually says that there are fewer blind people working for agencies that serve blind people now than there were 10 or 15 years ago. And that's one of the questions that I've pondered. I'm not sure I understand why that is, except perhaps that people have a different set of values about what those jobs actually mean and how they work. And I think there's certainly a sense in which there are some blind folks who perceive those jobs as indications that they've failed. Anicio, I'm going to let you jump in and actually talk about that. Anicio text messaged two other issues that he thinks we ought to consider, and I'm going to let him talk about those. So, Anicio, the mic is yours.
Well, I think in terms of the lower number of blind people working in the field, I think one of the reasons is there has been, in the last few years, a greater emphasis on providing itinerant work instead of bringing people, blind people, to a center. A lot of the work is being done in the community, in their homes, and once you do that, then you're creating a major obstacle for lots of blind applicants, which is the transportation. Have we talked about that here before?
I think the point that you make, Anicio, is actually a pretty powerful one. I think there is a very real sense in which many young people are actually significantly isolated, not just by the receipt of services in their homes, but also by the degree to which their contact with other blind people is significantly less than it was, say, a generation ago, which I think has had a chilling effect on the degree to which many of the blindness coping skills that they need in order to be really effective are absent for them. And I think that, indeed, one of the factors that has a part to play in the high level of unemployment among young people is the fact that so many of them are taught to despise and reject other blind people, to the point where, for the most part, they have little or no contact with them and regard any contact they have as almost like dealing with lepers, which is an absolutely scary thought for me.
Well, then, I'm wondering if that couldn't be the case more so with people who are mainstreamed in public schools, where they may be in a setting where they don't come in contact with blind people and maybe feel a bit uncomfortable, dare I say, God forbid, around blind people.
Yeah, Gary, that's exactly what I'm saying. Let's see if anyone has a final point that they'd like to make. I think we've begun to explore some of the issues that are out there, and we've at least begun to label some of the things that we can do. But let's see if there's a final comment that someone would like to make. Perhaps Aubrey?
Yes, I'll just make a comment, Paul. Thank you. First of all, the question of fewer blind persons in jobs with agencies of for the blind, there are two sides to that. One is there might be fewer than there were 10 or 15 years ago, but that obviously didn't change the statistics if the statistics of 70% is around for 25, 30 years. But I do agree that more blind persons should be. If we're going to change attitudes, agencies that are working with blind people should have blind persons in all kinds of positions, right across the board, not just president, but right across the board. I couldn't end, Paul, without I agree with Chris from Pennsylvania, who mentioned the question of training and talked about teaching people to interviews and social skills and so on. The concept, I believe, in any rehab training, Paul, you know, I firmly believe in this concept of self-awareness and empowerment. And I believe that that must be part of any social training for jobs amongst blind persons.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what I think we have is a fairly clear consensus that I think most of the folks who participated in tonight's exercise share. And that consensus is that there has to be fundamental change if we're going to impact the high unemployment rate. That the work that rehabilitation agencies have done over the past 15 or 20 years is demonstrably ineffective. The work that blindness organizations have done over the past 15 or 20 years seems to be demonstratively ineffective as well. And somehow we must seek to develop and implement a set of values that fundamentally alter the relationship of blind people to the society that they're part of. If we accept this, then one of the things that we need to do is to search on our own and explore on our own, after this program is over, some of the issues that have been raised by those who participated in the program. Perhaps at the core of the change that seems to be being proposed by our group tonight is the notion that we must move away from the idea of entitlement to an environment where high expectations of blind people is combined with a demand that opportunities for appropriate jobs actually be there. How do we transform these theoretical notions into reality? That may be the $64,000 question. I hope that all of you will continue to listen to Tuesday Topics and to ACB Radio, where listening is our way of seeing the truth.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.